The audio tape portions of your personal training system were recorded live at Tony Robbins seminars. The first two tapes, Three Steps to Personal Power and The Magic of Rapport, were recorded in Los Angeles at the Mind Revolution, a four-day seminar which includes Fear into Power, the Firewalk Experience. Tapes 3 and 4, Seven Character Traits of a Champion and Five Keys to Wealth and Happiness, were recorded at a one-day business seminar presented in-house to executives and staff of a carpeting corporation in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
I want to know what is the one foundational key to all of success. And so as I started to think about my life and all the things I'd read and all the books, you know, all the books that I'd read, all the seminars I attended, all the people I'd spoken to, all the people I'd associated with, and I try to think, what is it that they all had in common? What is the one thing that if I worked on that, everything else would fall into place? And I went back and started reading some of the books, you know, to find out that key element to success. And I remember the first book I picked up, you know, with this new goal in mind, I read the book, and right in the book it said, the number one key to success, the foundation of all success, is goal setting. And I thought, well, there's your answer. You asked, and there it is. And I got excited. I thought, that's right, because without a goal, you know that old phrase, you know, if you're without a goal, you're like a ship without a rudder. You're going to end up on the rocks. I thought, okay, that's good, that's true. Until I read the next book, which said, forget about goal setting, that is not enough. The next book said, time management is everything. You can have all the goals you want, but if you don't manage your time, that is the only thing in your life that you truly have control of. And how you spend your time is how you spend your life. And I thought, that's it. The number one key to success is time management. So I read the third book, which goes, forget goals, forget time management. It goes, the key to success in life is discipline. That is it. You can manage your time till you're blue in the face, but if you're not disciplined, nothing matters. I thought, that's it, discipline. So I read the next book, which goes, forget goals, forget discipline, forget time management. It's all belief. Because you can be disciplined, managing your time with great goals, but if you don't believe, nothing works. And you know what? Which one of these is true? They're all true. And you know what? I went for another dozen books. And I came up with a dozen different things you got to do to succeed. And I thought, but God, concentrating on all these things simultaneously feels like it's impossible. So I started looking and looking and looking, and I said, I want to know the one element that if I worked on this one thing, everything else would fall right into place. And finally, one day I came up with it. The one foundational key to all of success. You may want to write this down if you're interested in the one foundational key to all of success. If not, don't bother. And I came up with the answer, and the answer that I found was this: knowledge. Knowledge. I thought, certainly people who succeed, the reason they succeed, the one element that makes the difference, is they know things that people who do not succeed do not know. That is the one foundational key to all success. And as soon as I wrote down knowledge, I immediately crossed it out, because that is definitely not the number one foundational key to all success. It isn't. I mean, I can't even believe you wrote it down. How could it possibly be knowledge? How many of you know someone who knows every way they should change their life? They know how to change their life. They know they should change their life. And yet they still don't change it. How many of you know somebody like that? Maybe intimately. Yeah. Knowledge is not enough. A lot of us know what to do. We still don't do it. You know, otherwise everyone had a PhD would be successful. And you and I both know that's not true. I have a friend who has three PhDs. I didn't think that was physically possible to do. He has been his entire life a student, literally, a career student. And you know what? According to him, his own description of himself is he knows everything, but he does almost nothing. You know, he doesn't feel like he's accomplishing or adding a lot of value, but he does feel good about learning. So that's all he's done. So knowing is not enough. Knowledge is only power to the extent that it's used. The one foundational key to all success in my search and my studies makes me believe it's called personal power. And next to the words personal power, write down what they mean. Personal power means the ability to act, the ability to take action. The one foundational key to all success, then, is nothing but personal power, the ability to take action. Now, the reason I say this is if you study the most successful people in this culture, you're going to discover that the thing that really set them apart from most of their peers was not their incredible genius. Their genius was their ability to get themselves to do something while other people were still studying, thinking, or talking. That's the bottom line. The tendency in life, as we see super successful individuals, is to look at them and go, aren't they lucky? Aren't they lucky they were born with this tremendous genius or ability? You know, you look at a Steven Spielberg and you go, guy's an absolute genius. I could never be that way. Yet if you studied his personal history, and by the way, I'll share a little bit about his story tomorrow, you're going to discover that who he is today is the result of trying things that other people were not willing to try. And he learned from that and gave him an experience base from which he was willing to try other things. I'll give you an example of somebody like this. How about a guy named Colonel Sanders? How many of you have heard of him? Stupid question, right? Why have you all heard of him? Because every city in the United States that has at least 30,000 people in it has a minimum of a one Colonel Sanders chicken store. At least one. Now, can you imagine? That's a pretty major accomplishment. Now, how did that happen? Well, it's real simple. Colonel Sanders started when he was 19 years old. He had unlimited capital available to him. He graduated from both Harvard and Yale business schools. And he was a marketing genius. Are any of these true?
No.
When did Colonel Sanders start? He was 65 years old. What spurred him on his bark? Because he wanted to have a restaurant? No. Colonel Sanders got inspired by something. When he was 65 years old, he got his first Social Security check. It was for $99. He said,
I ain't living like this.
Or something like that. And the bottom line is, instead of writing his congressman, he used his personal what? He took some action. He stopped for a moment, and he thought about his life, and he said, what do I have as a resource that I could use in my life to make it better? How could I earn a living? What could I do? Because $99 is not going to support me. And so as he looked around, the only resource he found that he really had was he had one time had a restaurant, and he had chicken that people just from all over the area raved about. So he thought, I can sell my chicken recipe. And then he thought, wait a second, that's not going to make me much money. I sell a recipe, it's over. So then he came up with this neat idea. What if I took the recipe and I gave it to people who owned restaurants already, and I didn't charge them or didn't sell them the recipe, but rather I got a commission or a percentage of all the additional chicken they're selling because they're using my recipe, because I'm going to bring them in all this additional money, all this additional revenue because of my recipe. Now, how many of you in this room have ever had an idea for some kind of marketing idea or some little trinket or something you know just about everybody on the planet would use? How many of you had an idea like that? Let me see a show of hands. Nice and high so I can see. 80% of the room. How many of you walked into a store 6 months after you had the idea, and there it was, someone had stolen your idea and put it on the shelf? How many have had an idea like that? Now, what was the difference between that person and you? Was the difference intelligence? No. Was the difference skill? No. I doubt it. The difference was they used their personal power and you did not. While you were thinking, they were taking action. And the difference between Colonel Sanders and so many other people was he didn't just come up with a great idea. He hit the streets. He took action. He went to the first person. He went, hi there, Paul. I like your restaurant here. My name is Colonel Sanders. You know what? I have the best chicken recipe in the world. You're going to love my chicken recipe so much because you know what, Paul? When you use it, you are going to double, triple, maybe even quadruple your business. And you know what, Paul? I don't want you to like pay me for it. I don't want to sell you my recipe. I want to give it to you. All I want for it is I want a percentage of the money that you make on every piece of chicken that you ever sell for the rest of your life. That's all I want. How do you think Paul here responded? He went, excuse me, Mr. Sanders, but I think your brain is fried. I have my own chicken recipe. Why would I use yours and give you my profit? That's absolutely crazy. Is this a real beard? Now he kicks him out of the door. Now Colonel Sanders, fortunately, still has a thing called personal what? So what does he continue to do? He takes what? Action. He goes, hi there, Marcy. My name is Colonel Sanders. And he puts the same story on Marcy. And Marcy goes, excuse me, but what do you think you are, Santa Claus in the summer in a white suit? You're crazy. I'm not going to do this. She kicks him out. But he still has a thing called personal what? And he understands it's not what happens, it's what you what? So he kept on taking what? That's right. And by the way, how many no's do you think he got before he got his first yes? 25, 50, 100? Yeah, you read my book. 1,009 no's before he got his first yes. 1,009. I mean, how many of you in this room, after about 500 no's, would say to yourself, I better check my recipe? Come on. I mean, how many of you after 1,000 no's can honestly say you would have still gone and knocked on the next door? Let me see a show of hands. One person. I guess that's why they call so few people Colonel, huh? Yeah. There aren't many Colonel Sanders in the world because not many people are willing to pay that price. And by the way, if he had not gotten a yes on 1,009, what would he have done immediately? Gone for 1,010. Do you realize this man spent 2 years to make these calls, traveling across the United States, sleeping in the back of his car in his rumpled white suit? Do you know how he ate for 2 years? Take a wild guess what he ate. You got it. He'd walk in and go, you know what? Guess what, Tim? I have the best chicken recipe in the world. It's so much better than yours, it's a joke. And Tim would go, you never even tried mine. How do you know? He said, well, let me have some and I'll test it. That's how he survived. And you know what? The man changed the eating habits of a country. Unfortunately. And we'll talk about that in the health seminar. My point is he had personal power. And that's what makes the difference. That's really the foundation. You can talk about genius all you want, and I don't doubt that people have genius skills. But one of the ways you become a genius is by going out and doing whatever it takes. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you develop that skill. That's when you find out who you really are, when you're willing to put yourself to the test. And there may be some tests you'll want to think about. I don't know. You'll have to guess. The point is, how many of you have ever had a situation as you were growing up or as an adult where you saw someone who was more successful than you, emotionally or socially or financially, and you thought to yourself, I know I'm smarter than they are. How come they have all the success? How many of you have ever done that? Yeah, well, just remember, you probably are smarter. But being smarter doesn't make the difference. Because, see, the difference is action. See, a lot of people in life let their learning lead to knowledge. If you let your learning lead to knowledge, you become a fool. If you let your learning lead to action, you can become wealthy. In the truest sense of what wealth really means, meaning success in all areas of your life. You know, in the Bible it says, faith without works is what? Dead. That's a clue that believing is not enough. You've got to eventually do something. Now, how many of you here believe that the real difference in people then is their ability to use their personal power, their ability to get themselves to take action? How many of you believe that? Great, we all are in agreement. Next question. If that's really all it is, take action, learn from what you're doing, change your approach, keep taking action until, if that's really all it takes, then how come if it's that simple, how come everyone doesn't do that? How come everyone doesn't just keep taking action until they get the results that they want? Why? Yeah, fear is definitely one part of it. There are actually three elements that cause people to either use their personal power or not tap into it. I call them the three steps to personal power. Jot them down if you would. The three elements that if you have these three, you'll find yourself taking action until you succeed. If you're missing these three, you're going to find it very difficult to do so. So here's step number one. Step number one to using your personal powers, you've got to have an abundance of energy. Energy. Everything in life that matters requires an expenditure of energy. And the problem for most people in America and literally around the world is that most people run out of emotional gas as they're climbing the mountain of success. They just can't do it. Their mind says, let's go get them, and their body says, I can't even get out of bed. The mind is willing, but the spirit is weak. And what we have to do is have the physical energy to be able to make our dreams into a reality. Very intelligent people know what to do and don't do it just because they don't feel well. Now, how many of you in this room can remember a day when you woke up feeling really tired and lethargic? How many of you remember a day like that? For some of you, it was recent. What was your day like that day? Think about it. Were you more stressed on that kind of day? Did you have the same desire? Did you produce the same quality result? I doubt it. Now, think of a day in your life. How many of you remember a day when you woke up, from the moment you woke up, you felt physically vibrant and strong? How many of you remember a day like that? Now, even if there were stresses, didn't you handle it differently? I mean, I know this is basic, but hey, again, there are fundamentals in life that we need to remind ourselves. You know, I love people say things like, well, I tried goals last Thursday. They don't work. Fundamentals have to be practiced daily, and sometimes things we know we still don't apply. So the reminder, the kick in the pants is what we need, and energy is something we all have to remind ourselves on how to maximize it, how to get more out of it. I mean, I'll give you an example. I remember the first time I ever went to New York City. I do seminars there about every 8 weeks now. And at the time, it was my first time there about, oh, I don't know, 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. I showed up in New York, and the promoters there were really great. They treated me really fabulous. They picked me up in this limousine, and I'm sitting in the back of the car. It's one of my first seminars. I'm all excited. And I'm, you know, a little bit, you know, not clear about everything that I'm going to do and where I am and what New York is really about. And so I sit in the back of the car, and I turn on the stereo, and I'm listening to the music. And after the music's done, I get this education because the DJ comes on, a New York DJ, which is interesting to listen to. And he goes through this rap, and all of a sudden he says, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we made it. It's hump day. And I thought, these New Yorkers have a new sexual approach. And I continued to listen. It had nothing to do with sex. Have you ever heard of this concept, this hump day thing? You have? What is it? You know about it too. It's Wednesday. What it means is you're more than halfway to the weekend. Can you imagine living such a disgustingly boring life that you look forward to only 2 days out of seven to the point that you celebrated when you were halfway there? In California, it's worse. I'm sure you've heard. There's a new club that's formed here called Thank God It's What?
Friday.
For people who look forward to 1 day out of seven. And you know what these intelligent people do on these 1 or 2 days that they call the weekend they look forward to? They do things on those 2 days that on Monday They've done things to their body so they can't even remember what it was they did for those days that they were looking forward to. I mean, that's pretty amazing. And these people are intelligent. Maybe you even know one. But you know what? It's easy to get caught up, isn't it, in making a living instead of designing a life. And that's a trap you don't want to get caught into. Because if you do, you come to the end of your life and you say to yourself, is this all there is? And that's not something you'll ever do, because you can change and you can get more out of your life. So you don't want to come to the end of your life and find out you lived 1/10 of it, not because you didn't care, but because you were tired, because you just didn't follow through on the little things, because you just didn't feel like it. You want to make sure you feel like it. Now you go, well, how do I do that? Well, number one is you take care of this vessel called the body, because through it, all your dreams and goals become a reality. And if you don't take care of it, you're not going to make those things happen, because that dynamic extra push that makes people go over the top won't be there unless you take care of it. Now, we have a health seminar that you're all going to learn about on Monday, and you're going to learn how to do this. But we don't have a health seminar tonight, and to get yourself to a state of mind where you're willing to get in front of a bed of burning hot coals or any other massive fear and get yourself to take action will require a tremendous amount of energy. Now, as a group here, you have a great energy level. And when a group doesn't have a great energy level, I'll tell them that too, so I'm not pumping you up or pumping you down. So you've got a great energy level. It's got to be about 5 times what it is right now for you to successfully walk. It's going to have to be at least 5 times stronger. Now, how do we do that? Well, first of all, do you know what takes more physical energy than any other physical activity? Digestion? No, digestion is number 2. You're very close. What's number 1? No, not thinking. No? No? Who said that? Sex. Would you stand up so we know who you are, sir? Yeah, sex is number 1. That's correct. Digestion is number 2. Now, depending upon your sex life, digestion may be the number 1 energy drain in your life. The point is that, look, I am a person that exercises. I work out. I play racquetball. I lift weights. I run. I'm a real man. I sweat. I don't eat quiche. You know what I mean? Now, the bottom line is, for you to tell me digestion takes more energy than running, I go, you're crazy. But you know what? I don't run for 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, or 18 hours straight. But most of us eat in a way that is not consistent with how our body functions, but rather is consistent with how we've been programmed by advertising and our culture. As a result, we waste nerve energy, and we wake up tired. I mean, how many of you in this room wake up after, let's say, even 7 hours of sleep, and you're still tired? Raise your hand and be honest. 80% of the room. Why? Because your brain is sleeping, but you're eating in a way where your digestive process is going on 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 hours. So while you're sleeping mentally, your body is not recharging. It's expending nerve energy. And that's why you wake up tired. So we're going to teach you many ways, how to breathe, how to eat, how to do many different things in the way you look at the world, the way you diet, or the way that you use food to produce the results that you want. But again, we can't use that tonight because most of you have already eaten. For some of you, it's more obvious than others. Like, when I walked in this room, most of you are in a high-energy state. Some of you walked in tired. Some of you got much more tired when you saw the fire. So we have to try something else tonight, until Monday at least. And the other approach that we're going to use tonight is called fake it till you make it. Is energy all you need to succeed? No. Energy is a good start, but it is not enough. A lot of people in life teach, get excited and everything will change. Well, excitement is a good start, but it is not enough to change everything. Energy by itself is not enough. You can be excited about lifting 1,000 pounds until you get to the gym. Then you need more than energy and more than excitement. You don't want to be what I call a permagrinner. You know the kind of people I'm talking about? They're always like, you go, how you doing? They go, great. You go, what are you doing? They go, I don't know, but it feels good. I mean, that's better than people who complain, but it's also a long way from major personal power. So in order to have personal power, you got to go beyond energy to the second step. And the second step is skill. You've got to develop skill to back up that energy. And there are 2 skills that human beings have to muster if they really, and master rather, if they really want to achieve all they want in their lives. 2 skills, in my opinion. Skill number 1 is the skill or the ability. The skill or the ability to specifically define exactly what it is that you want. Now, when you ask most people, what do you want in your life, what do they say?
I don't know.
Listen, you've got to know. In fact, if you're one of those people who have lots of energy and you don't know what you want, you're what we call dangerous. It's like having fuel spilled all over the place, and wherever somebody drops a match, kaboom, that's where you go with all that energy. You've got to know what you want. If you don't know what you want, someone else is going to know what they want you for. So you need to be clear about what you want in your life. Now, some people say, I know what I want. And you go, what do you want? And they go, I don't want to live this way anymore. See, if you think about what you don't want, that's also what you're going to get. In fact, if you want to write down a phrase, write down that my life is nothing but a mirror of my consistent thoughts. The experience of my life is a mirror of my consistent thoughts. Which means, if you think about all the time what you don't want, that's probably what you're going to experience in your life. So you better focus on what you do want. Now, some people tell me, I know what I want, and it's positive. I go, what do you want? They go, I want more money. I go, fine, here's $2, get out of here. If you're that general about what you want, you may be getting what you want and not know it. You've got to learn to become very precise about what you want. So that's skill number one. Skill number two is the skill or the ability to help others discover what they want. The skill or the ability to help others find out what they want, and then to help them to achieve their desires. The skill and the ability to help others discover what they want, and then to help them to achieve what they want in a short period of time. So skill number two, the skill or the ability to help others discover what they want, and then to help them to achieve what they want in a short period of time. See, in life, if you want true success, you've got to make sure that you fill other people's needs. I mean, that's basic. Now, most of us know these things, and yet again, most of us get caught up and we fail to focus on them in our daily lives. In my studies, I mean, I've read over 750 books total in the last, I guess, 8 years now that I've been studying personal development. And I've read everything from your basic positive thinking to your more esoteric therapies. And the bottom line, out of all that information, is unless you apply it, unless you get really specific about how can I use this in accordance with something that I want, and how can I use this to empower other people to get what they want, if you don't really bring it back to that place, then all it becomes is intellectual fluff. Well, you understand and you know, but you don't do.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over at this point to play side two.
Out of all the sciences and approaches that there were to success, the one that hit me most and the one that changed my life the most was this approach called neuro-linguistic programming. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP for short. It was basically created by two men, a man named Dr. John Grinder, who was a great linguist, and Richard Bandler, who was a gestalt therapist and a computer expert. And what was different about NLP when I experienced it is it was not fluffy, it was not generalizations. It was precise, it was rigorous, and it produced consistent results with anyone that I applied it with, especially myself. It was literally the science of how to program my mind. I mean, neuro means nervous system, linguistic means language, programming means a way to get a consistent result. So it's how do I use language to program myself to get consistent results? John Grinder and Richard Bandler had in common one thing. They were totally bored and they were both geniuses in their fields. And they looked around their lives and said, how can we really accomplish more, achieve more, be happier? And they thought, well, the way to do it is help other people get what they want. So they said, what do most people on this planet want? And the answer they came up with is that most people want to change something. How many of you here want to change something in your life? Either how you feel about something or how you're behaving. Almost everybody. So they hit the jackpot. So they said, why don't we find someone or a series of people who are the best in the world at changing people in short periods of time? Because people want to change now, not someday. Let's find the people that are the best. Let's discover what do they use in their language. What do they do in the way they program people? What is it that sets them apart from all the rest? So they went around looking for the best people in creating change, and they came across several people, but the one who stood out the most was this man I mentioned earlier, named Dr. Milton Erickson. How many of you have already heard of Erickson? I'm curious. Very good. Erickson is probably the greatest hypnotherapist and medical doctor that ever lived. This man was a genius. You come sit down with Erickson and say, Erickson, I'd like to stop smoking. Well, he would sit back in his chair, and he began to tell you stories about the birds and the bees, about rubber tree plants, about what he had for lunch yesterday, about what's going to happen the next time you watch any form of commercial that advertises instantaneous relief of anything, about the color of your eyes when you look back on your future, having made changes that took you in the direction you wanted to go, and then dug deeper in your personal history until you remembered a time in your life when you didn't think you could do something. It looked hopeless. It looked unbelievably big as a project, and yet somehow in the end, you broke through and you achieved, and you even surprised yourself. And then you all of a sudden stepped into that moment and felt those feelings and brought them back to the future. Maybe even also now to the present, where you could use them daily for the rest of your life. You actually say things like that to you. And so what Bandler and Grinder did was they studied this man, Milton Erickson, as well as other great communicators. And they began to break down the linguistics, the language patterns, the tonality, the physiology, in the precise ways that caused this man to be able to take someone who had maybe had a lifetime phobia and in 1 hour handle it versus maybe the normal 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 year approach. And they taught it to people who not necessarily had a background in being able to make these kinds of changes, people who didn't have 25 years of experience like Erickson. They did something they called modeling. And what modeling means simply is this, that if anyone can do something, then so can you. It's all a matter of strategy. People share, no matter where they are in the world, one thing in common. We all share the same common type of nervous system. We have basically very, very similar equipment. We may have put things in this computer called our brain that are different than other people. We have the basic fundamentals available to us. We must load our computer in a similar way, and we must run it in a similar way to get similar results. And what they did was a study. How did this man communicate? How did other great communicators communicate? They taught those patterns of communication to other people, and they were able to get results without having to spend 25 years. Because it took Erickson 25 years of trial and error to get these results. And he wasn't even sure how he was doing it. But they figured out the key fundamental tools. And I came along, and I became one of their top students. Primarily because I didn't have very many limiting belief systems. I had not been taught that it would take 5 years to change someone, so they didn't have to fight me. When they said, you can change somebody in 5 minutes to an hour who's had a lifetime phobia, I believed them. Which is one of the keys, of course, to success that all of you know, because every religious book on the planet talks about the power of belief or faith. That's because it's a law and it's how your brain works. And the bottom line is I applied what they said and I got tremendous results. And I went out and I was willing to challenge people. I got on radio and TV and challenged psychiatrists, psychologists. I said, listen, I can take anybody. I don't care who they are. And there's no magic bullet, but in 95% of the cases, I don't care how long they've been treated, in one session, they won't have that fear of phobia anymore. I don't care who they are. And I got challenged on radio and on television, and what I said is, bring me one of your patients. And I got results. And all of a sudden, nobody attacked me anymore. It's the amazing thing about results. All of a sudden, I had these people that were my fans, or people that just didn't say anything when I made these claims. And that's really what started to get me a reputation, allowed me to reach more people. So I started just doing private therapies, and I'd work all day doing therapies, and then I started doing seminars. And it just expanded and expanded. I worked with people with major challenges that I didn't know if I could handle. I took a man who had been stuttering for over 30 years. End of an hour session, no more stuttering. I took a woman who hadn't had an orgasm in 10 years. Boom! Orgasm right there! Right? Without touching her, I did not touch her. Became one of my most popular therapies, though. The bottom line is, I started to get results. And what I began to do in my life was I began when I had NLP to study something really simple. I began operating from a principle that basically Jim Rohn had taught me when he said, study success. He had said, success leaves clues. And what he meant was, anyone who gets any result in life, in order to get it, instead of saying they're a genius, realize that all results come from some set of actions. And there are only two kinds of actions people can take. Mental actions, the things they do in their head, and physical actions, the things that they do in the world. If you take the same mental and physical actions in the exact same way, you're going to produce similar results. If you sow, so shall you reap. So I started studying how to get greater results by modeling the actions of effective people in a very rigorous and precise way. And I said, well, how did this firewalking come about? Well, it came about primarily because I was looking for another challenge. I took these skills and I went to the United States Army. I went to a general there. I said, General, I can take any training program you do in the entire Army, and I can cut the training time in half and increase the competency. He said, you're crazy. I said, no, sir, I'm expensive. We argued back and forth till he gave me a shot. You know what I did? I said, look, give me any project. I don't care what it is. So he gave me a 4-day pistol shooting program. The Army spent 10 years to get it to be 4 days, to be that short. In 4 days, they still failed over 30% of the people. Now, how do you turn that around? Well, I didn't know how to shoot a gun, but I said, give me your best shooters in the country, people who get the best results. And I'm going to find out what they do in their head and what they do in their body that makes them the best, and we'll create a training program that creates your brand new people in the same way that these people shoot, giving them the same mental and physical strategies. So they gave me the best shooters in the country, and I modeled them. And here's how you model someone. Write these three, and then we'll stretch, and then we'll do something that will be very fun for you. There are three things you must duplicate about another person if you want to duplicate their long-term success in a given area. And we call the duplication process, again, modeling. And here are the three elements you must model about a person or a group of people. Number one key to duplicating someone's excellence is you must duplicate that person's belief systems. Now, that sounds pretty simple and pretty basic, and yet again, it's critical. Your beliefs play a larger role than almost anything else into your long-term success. If someone is succeeding in an area where you are not, before you even look at their actions, question them about their beliefs. And tomorrow we're going to teach you how to find out someone's specific beliefs that make a difference. But just using common sense, you want to ask them questions and see, what do they believe that's different than you? Let me give you an example of how beliefs play a role. How many of you have ever been at someone's house and they said, would you please go in the kitchen and get me the salt? It's up in the cupboard. And you thought to yourself, I don't know where the salt is. And you said that to yourself as you were walking in the room. You walk in, you open the cupboard, you look up and down the cupboard, saying to yourself, I don't know where it is. Finally, you shout, I can't find the salt. The person gets very upset. They walk in, they walk right next to you, they walk right in front of your face, they reach right in front of you, and they go, what is this? And it's the salt. Now, how many of you ever had this situation occur to you? All of us. Why? Did your eyes not see the salt? Oh, they saw the salt, all right. But you were not allowed to consciously perceive that it was there, even though your eyes saw it, simply because you had pre-programmed a belief that you did not know where the salt is. So when the eyes brought in the information and your brain was supposed to interpret it, the brain went, whoa, whoa, no, no, he can't see that because he said it wasn't there and we don't want to make him into a liar. In psychology, we call this a scotoma, which means a blind spot, and we create them all the time. And your beliefs, no matter what they are, have inherent within them a series of scotomas or blind spots that are keeping you from being and doing all that you can in a particular area. So if you want to succeed at the same level as another person, number one, find out what they believe about that activity that you do not believe and change. I mean, think about it. I'm sure you must know the story about Roger Bannister. Remember him? He's the guy who ran the first 4-minute mile. I mean, think about it. Here is something that men have been, women also, but men especially, have been trying to break since the time of the Greeks. At the time of Greece, men were trying to beat the 4-minute mile. Up until the time of Roger Bannister in the 1950s, right? Here we have a situation where no human being was thought to be able to move that fast. How did he break it? He broke it by changing his belief systems, not by changing his body. He changed what he pictured over and over again until he broke it. You know what's really interesting? Within 1 month of Roger Bannister breaking a 4-minute mile, the first human being to do it, 32 more people broke a 4-minute mile. In 1 month! Where no one in history had ever done it before. How do you explain that? Because beliefs are everything. Within 1 year, over 327 people had run a 4-minute mile in 1 year. When in all the entire history before that, not even one human being had done it. That's pretty amazing. That's because beliefs are everything. So when I went to the Army, for example, I got these best shooters in the country, and the first thing I did was interview them and discover their key belief systems about shooting. I compared them to people who were not successful at shooting, and it was obvious that there were at least 30 beliefs that were different. That is 30 specific philosophies about shooting that the great shooters had that the poor shooters did not. Here's the second key that you have to duplicate someone's excellence. Key number two, you must duplicate that person's mental strategy, or another word might be their mental syntax. To duplicate someone's success, you must duplicate their mental syntax. Now, syntax may sound like a complicated word. It's actually very simple. If I say to you, the dog bit Johnny, you all know what that means. What if I say, Johnny bit the dog? Obviously, it's a whole different experience, especially if you're Johnny. Now, the question is, did I add or subtract any words here? Yes or no? No. All I did was change the order and sequence, also known as the syntax. And when you change the syntax of something, you totally change the meaning. Now, here's how this is important. If we're looking at how to get a result, we have to realize that the order of our actions plays as big a role in getting the result as the actions themselves. If I'm baking a cake, and I take the same actions as you, but I put in the last element in first and the first element in last, I'm not going to get the same quality of cake. The same is true in how your brain works. Example, how many of you in this room are really good at spelling? You're an excellent speller. Let me see a show of hands. How many of you are terrible spellers? Be honest and raise your hand. Now, if you're a terrible speller, tell me the truth. If you're a terrible speller, does that mean you're less intelligent than a good speller? Yes or no? Yes or no? No. Bad spellers always say no. And by the way, they're right. Spelling has nothing to do with intelligence. It has everything to do with syntax. Terrible spellers usually try to immediately sound words out or feel them out. Excellent spellers see a word. They get a picture in their mind first. Then they begin to sound and feel. Now that one syntactical change can make the difference between being an excellent speller and being a terrible speller. Because try and sound out the word Albuquerque. I dare you. It won't work. But somebody who can see it can spell it forwards and backwards. And by the way, even if you're not good at visualizing, by Monday night, you're all going to be taught the technique for strategy for spelling, and you'll spell perfectly. You'll spell words forwards and backwards without any problem whatsoever, because we're going to teach you the proper syntax. But that's number two, mental syntax. I'm going to explain later how to duplicate that. Here's the last key, and one we're going to use tonight a lot. And that is, to duplicate someone's excellence, you must use your body in a similar way as they're using theirs. In other words, you must duplicate the way they're using their physiology. You must use your body, your physiology, in a similar way as the person whose results you're trying to duplicate. Why? Because the way you use your body determines how you think and how you feel. The way you think and feel also makes you use your body in a certain way. They're totally connected. In fact, there's an old phrase that says, there is no mind, there's only body. There also is no body, there's only mind, because it's totally connected. Now, what I want you to see is how these two are connected tonight, because to walk on fire, you're going to need a specific physiology to keep yourself in a state of mind where in the middle you don't freak out. And so if you look at firewalkers around the world, there's a very similar physiology that they all seem to share, a certain kind of posture, breathing pattern, etc. And we're going to show you what that is. But the same thing is true in any other situation in life. If someone is like really good at playing the piano, one of the things you might want to do that could instantly change your ability to function better at the piano is alter your body and sit like they're sitting and breathe like they're breathing and have the same muscular relaxation or tension, and all of a sudden you'll begin to anticipate and move your body similarly. Have you ever been in such rapport with a friend that what happened was they started to do something and you started to do it simultaneously, or they thought something and you thought it simultaneously? Have you had that experience? Sure. Why? Because you were using your body in a very similar way, so your brains were functioning in a very similar way. And I'll give an example of what we're going to do tonight and also something we'll do tomorrow that's connected with it. Tomorrow we'll do an example where I'm going to have someone out of the audience, anyone at all, come up here and sit down. And I'll say to that person, think of a time in your life when you had intense feelings about something, anything at all, positive or negative feelings, it doesn't matter. So this guy gets up here and he has these feelings. And I say, put your body in the same state. So he goes, okay, I'm there. And I ask the group, what is this guy feeling? People look at this guy and they go, he's frustrated, he's angry, he's upset, he's concerned. Nobody gets it. So then I get a volunteer, a woman comes up here, she sits next to him. I tell her to take on the same posture in her body. So she sits like this. She puts her arm like this. She puts her face in the same position. We coach her until the two become an exact mirror image of each other. When they are identical, we turn to this woman and we say to her, what are you feeling? In 95% of the cases, she will say the exact word this man is thinking. What's more, is after we do this on stage, every one of you will do this in the room with a total stranger you don't know. Not only will you get the same word, but one-third of you, on average, will see in your head the exact same thing this person's what they're picturing in their head, even though you've never spoken to them in your life. For example, this woman says, I can even tell you what he's doing. He's watching television. And the guy goes, and she goes, not only that, I can tell you what he's watching. It's the Super Bowl. This guy just about falls out of his chair. We've had people go, I see these two children. One's a blonde and one's a brunette. We've had other people go, you know, this one guy sitting like this. The person said, he just finished eating Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, there aren't a lot of clues here, right? And the person says, not only that, but he ate a lot of dark meat. I know, because I don't like it. And by the way, this is not like the exception. One-third of the room will have that kind of precision. You go, well, how's that possible? Or some of you go, ooh. It's not like that. Your brain and body are so linked that if you use your body in the exact same way as another person, what it does is send the same impulses to your brain. And your brain, like a motion picture projector and sensor, starts to create the exact same sensations and, in many cases, the same pictures in such detail that you have the exact same experience as this person you've never met or ever spoken to. That's pretty powerful. So if you can do that, you think it might be useful if someone is more successful than you to take on their body and start functioning the way they're functioning. You bet, because then you'll start thinking the way they're thinking, feeling the way they're feeling, and producing similar results. That's the power of physiology. So with the pistol shooters, I found out their mental strategy, their beliefs, and the way they use their bodies that was consistent. I created a design that when the Army tested it, instead of 4 days, it took 1 day. Instead of qualifying only 70% of the people, mine qualified 100% of the people in 1 day. It tripled the number of people that qualified at the highest level called expert. And the colonel on the project wrote a letter to the general saying it was the first breakthrough in pistol shooting since World War I. Now, I tell you that not so you go, well, isn't he a great modeler? Anyone could have done what I did. I was just willing to put myself on the line and try something that I didn't know if I could do it or not, but I put myself in a situation where I couldn't turn back and where I said, whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. Can you imagine a situation like that? And then I pulled it off. But primarily because I knew three things. I found out three things about the best shooters, and the three things you need to find out about anyone you want to duplicate are, number one, they're what? What? They're what? Number two, they're? And number three, they're? Physiology. Write down one more word, and then let's move and get our bodies out of these positions. Write down the word stretch. Stretch. And next to the word stretch, a philosophy of stretching is a philosophy of life. Stretching is a philosophy of life. And what it means is simply this. Stretching means if you can't, you must. If you can't do something, then you must. And this philosophy was taught to me by my mentor, John Grinder. John came to me one day and he said, Tony, do you believe in limitation? I said, no, sir. I believe our only limitations are our expectations. I said, I believe limited thoughts create limited people. Unlimited thoughts create unlimited people. I said, I believe the only way you know how far you can go is to go too far. How does that make you feel? Real comfortable knowing you're with a guy who feels this way when you're going to go walk on fire. Anyway, he said, Tony, if you really believe that, if you don't believe in limitation, then I want you to remember this. If you ever find yourself saying, I can't do that, then you must do it. I said, what does that mean? If I can't jump off a cliff, then I must? He said, no, be intelligent. He said, but if you ever say, I can't do something, but if you were to do it, it would make you a better person, it would make you grow, it would make you expand, and if you say you can't, then you must. Because if you don't do it, and you feel like you can't, then you're living a life of limitation. He said, you're not perfect, but stretch yourself. That's what stretching's all about. If you can't, you must. And I can tell you honestly, for the last 3.5 to 4 years, I have stretched myself consistently. And that's how I've discovered a much bigger part of myself that I never really knew existed. I had a hope that existed, but I didn't know until I put myself on the line where I didn't think I could do something, but I said I must, and I just did it. And I pulled it off time and time again. What if you decided to live by this philosophy? What if from this day forward, for the rest of your life, any time this voice inside of you said, I can't do this, then another voice said, then I must, and got you to take action? What kind of life do you think you would live if you lived where every time you said, I can't, and you said, I must, and you took action? What kind of life would you live? One of adventure. Now, some people, that wouldn't be a very safe life. That wouldn't be a very secure life living that way. Listen, if you want security, go to prison. What was the first key to personal power? Energy. What was the second key? Yes. So if you have the energy to follow through and you know what you want and you know how to help other people get what they want and how to create changes, then the only thing that's really left that would stop you is fear. So the third key to personal power is called turning fear into power, which is what tonight was all about. Turning fear into power.